You can't turn on a TV today without seeing a courtroom show. With a celebrity judge, just the judge in the way, deciding who takes home the dough. But long before television,
yeah, people used to live without it.
God sent celebrity judges to Israel, and there's a book about it. It's called Judges, that's the name. There's a subject in the title, all one and the same. Like a book about weather, calm weather, or a book about Heather, calm Heather. Who's Heather?
She's my cousin.
Oh.
And that's her name.
Yeah, but who are the judges?
Well, you got Othniel and Ehud, Shamgar and Deborah, Gideon and Tola, Jaya and Jephthah. Who could forget about old Ibsan, or Elon and Abdon, and the most famous of them all, that long-haired dude named Samson.
He was strong.
They're the judges.
It's called Jimmy's,
or a book about Henry called Henry.
Who's Henry?
He's my neighbor.
Oh,
and that's his name.
Yeah, but who are the judges again?
You've got Othniel and Ehud, Shamgar and Deborah, Gideon and Tola, Giant and Jephthah. Who could forget about old Ibsan, or Elon and Abdon, and the most famous of them all, that long-haired dude named Samson.
He was strong. Until he got a haircut.
All right. And now we get to talk about Samson.
Ooh.
He's strong. Yes. He is strong. I'm glad. If you've learned one thing from Judges class, it's that Samson was strong. Okay, let's see. We started already with kind of leading into Samson, though we didn't deal with Samson specifically. We dealt with his parents. But before we talk about Samson this morning, let's pray together. Father God, we give thanks to you. We give praise to you. You're a good God. You guard us and watch over us. You've given your Son, Lord, as a sacrifice for our sin. And as we come to your word this morning, as we come to study and to know you better, let us truly be instructed, not just by your word, but by your spirit. In the name of Christ we pray. Amen. Okay, so the angel of the Lord came to Manoah and his wife, said, you're going to have a baby. The results were interesting, right? Predictable. Manoah freaks out a little bit over everything. He's just very emotional. I'm going to have a child. I just saw God. I'm going to die. Manoah's wife holds it together, less hysterical and excited. She's going to have a child. So we come to... we need to go back. We need to go way back. We come to this in chapter 14. And we begin seeing what happens to Samson as he grows and as he does the things that he does. Samson is perhaps, in some ways, one of the more interesting judges because, unlike the other judges, he does very little judging in terms of any civil matter. Like all the others, and you know, we pointed out that a lot of them have military connections. Not all of them, but a lot of them have military connections. But all of them went through this process of judging. Even the ones that we don't have any civil thing for, like Tola or Jer, we don't know what they were involved in terms of military action. But they were sitting judges. They were doing stuff civil matters. Samson has a lot less of that, but he's still a very interesting study for us. It may come up later in the notes because I don't remember if I have included it or not. But another thing that would be of interest is that the period over which Samson judges would actually have overlapped with Samuel, at least to some degree. So Samuel may have been a young boy during some of the exploits of Samson, but there probably was an overlap between them, which makes it a more interesting writing, like kind of connection, that this was probably, some of this was occurring during the lifetime of the writer, which also kind of explains the Samson portion of Judges has a lot more detail and it's a lot more personal. It gets into a lot more things. So let's talk about Samson. Samson has, over the course of his life, we're going to see between this week and next week, he has a major problem in life. And you're going to think it's women. And you'd be kind of right. It's not women specifically. That's not his issue, that he has a problem with the ladies. I mean, in some ways, he doesn't have a problem with the ladies. Like the ladies like him because he's a hunk of Israelite love. So he doesn't have a problem in this way. But he has a problem with passion and self-gratification. Like he wants to fulfill any desire he has. And we'll see that over the course of things. That applies to his relationships, with ladies and his parents, as we're going to see here in a moment. But it also applies to other things that he does. He has a desire, something he wants to do, and he just goes and fulfills it without sort of any thinking forward about what will this cause to me. So it's what we see. He is led by troubling passions. Chapter 14, Samson went down to Timnah, and at Timnah he saw one of the daughters of the Philistines. We went over the area on the map where we're at. We're kind of in central Israel here. Timnah is a Philistine-controlled area. And so when he goes down there, naturally, he's going to see a daughter of the Philistines. There were probably lots of daughters of the Philistines there. But he sees one in particular that sort of catches his eye. So he came up and he told his father and mother and said, "I saw one of the daughters of the Philistines at Timnah. Now get her for me as a wife." But his father and mother said to him, "Is there not a woman among the daughters of your relatives or among all your people that you must go to take a wife from the uncircumcised Philistines?" But Samson said to his father, "Get her for me, for she is right in my eyes." All right, let's talk about this. Verses 2 and 3, Samson's interest in this woman was likely troubling for his parents, because of a lot of factors. But primarily, Samson is to be a judge, and he's to deliver. This was from the messenger, from the angel of the Lord, and what God had communicated to Manoah and his wife is that your son will begin to deliver the people, particularly from the Philistines. So he's supposed to be a judge, and he's supposed to deliver Israel for the Philistines, and he goes out and he finds a girl he likes, and who is she? She's a Philistine. So it's completely backwards from the things that he should be doing. Samson has become attracted to and desires to join with the very people that are persecuting the Israelites. Not only is she a foreigner, she represents the very thing from which the Israelites need rescue. And so he has picked the most bizarre place to go. Also, some notes, just so you know, when Manoah and his wife said, "What about here among your relatives?" They don't mean like at the family reunion, "Let's pick someone for you." That would be odd, but also contrary to the law. They're speaking in the larger context of the tribe to which they're related, which would have been fine. Instead, Samson says, "No, I want this woman. She's right in my eyes," right? She completes me, right? The world seems not right, and then when I see her, everything's right. Okay, some of you may you know, have emotions like that. You can talk about that later, but not in class. Okay. verse 4. His father and mother did not know that it was from the Lord, for he was seeking an opportunity against the Philistines. At that time, the Philistines ruled over Israel. Samson's interest being from the Lord does not mean that his decisions are wise. Rather, God has provided for these in Samson that he might, his work might be accomplished. It doesn't mean Samson's making the right decision. It just means God is permitting all of this to happen so he can bring about the goals and the ends that he has in mind. We get kind of a message from the writer. It's okay. You know, he's basically telling us it's okay. Parents didn't know, but God is going to use this. Verse 5, then Samson went down with his father and mother to Timnah, and they came to the vineyards at Timnah. And behold, a young lion came toward him, roaring. Then the Spirit of the Lord rushed upon him, and although he had nothing in his hand, he tore the lion to pieces as one tears a young goat. If you've ever done that. But he did not tell his father or his mother what he had done. Then he went down and talked with the woman, and she was right in Samson's eyes. After some days, he returned to take her, and he turned aside to see the carcass of the lion, because he was gloating over his kill. And behold, there was a swarm of bees in the body of the lion and honey. He scraped it out into his hands and went on eating as he went, and he came to his father and mother and gave some to them. And they ate, but he did not tell them that he had scraped the honey from the carcass of a lion. One might surmise a number of reasons that Samson did not share this incident with his parents. I mean, why wouldn't you? If you, like, ran into a little lion and you felt the Spirit of the Lord come upon you and you were like, little lion, boom, you know. And Samson's story is so fantastic. So why wouldn't you be bragging about that? Because it's unclean. I mean, he's not supposed to be doing it. So that's definitely part of why he wouldn't. I mean, he's supposed to be a Nazarite, so he's not supposed to be by death at all. So that's an issue already. It could be that he is secretive by nature. Some children are like that, even when they're doing very normal things. You're like, what are you doing? Nothing. Have you ever, anyone met those kids? Anyone been those kids? It's okay. I mean, it's just the way some kids are, right? Even when they're like, they're not up to naughtiness. They're just very private and secretive. Maybe that's Samson. Given everything else we know about Samson, I'm guessing it's not that one. He seemed pretty upfront about most of the things that were going on in his life. But it's possible as a child, a young guy. So he's, because he's in his, likely his teens at this point. Older teens. Could be that he was embarrassed by what happened. This might go to the fact of his own Nazarite vow. He's embarrassed because now he's done something contrary to the vow that he is kind of under. It could be that he is humble and he doesn't want anyone to know. Again, this doesn't really fit with a lot of the rest of Samson's life, but it's a possibility. When you look at verses 8 and 9 with the issue with the honey, Samson's attitude toward the honey is also reflected in his attitude towards the Philistines and the young woman. In both cases, Samson's attraction causes him to disregard the holiness to which God has called him. He is dedicated to his own self-gratification. So though it's just circumstances going on in life, it does serve as a sort of illustration of the things going on in his life. This honey is an illustration of the stuff going on with the Philistines and the young woman. So my question to you in terms of application this morning is, what may serve as evidence of a casual indifference toward God among believers? Can we grow indifferent towards the things of God? And what would be evidence of that? Apathy. Good. Right?
Some things that hit deeply, like difficult year and all the time, so we don't really impact
the body. Sure. Yeah. It just stops. There's a saying, familiarity breeds contempt. You guys heard that? I've heard it in a lot of different contexts. But while sometimes it does breed contempt when you just become overly familiar with something, it's not, a lot of times it just breeds indifference. And we start stop taking the wonder of things. We begin to think our salvation is so commonplace. We don't stop and ponder the marvelousness that God would save us in our sin, or how incredible the sacrifice was that Jesus made. We stop those things. We watch a video about martyrs, right? You all saw the video in chapel, and it's very good, very moving. We get to the end of that, we're like, wow, that's so incredible that they would be willing to give up their lives. And some of us, you know, not willing to give up our afternoons just to do study. We just become accustomed to it, indifferent to it. Something for us to be thinking about. I think it's an issue for Samson. He just becomes so accustomed to his position. That's right. Okay. I understand. So we watch out our windows. Oh, it's just another couple. Yeah. You got to be like the first. Which is what I did. Okay. It's a different story, but I can see what you're... Yeah, just you become accustomed to things, even though it's wonderful and fantastic. So what happens to Samson? Samson's parents, against their better judgment, go and get him a wife. So his father went down to the woman, verse 10. Samson prepared a feast there, for so the young men used to do. It was the custom, speaking of getting engaged. And as soon as the people saw him, and they brought 30 companions to be with him. And Samson said to them, "Let me now put a riddle to you. If you can tell me what it is within the 7 days of the feast and find it out, then I will give you 30 linen garments and 30 changes of clothes," which was significant. "But if you cannot tell me what it is, then you shall give me 30 linen garments and 30 changes of clothes." And they said to him, put your riddle that we may hear it. And he said to them, "Out of the eater came something to eat. Out of the strong came something sweet." And in 3 days, they could not solve the riddle. As we are talking about this, realize that such a boon would have meant great wealth for Samson. I mean, 30 changes of clothes may not seem overly significant to us, but that's because we live in a different era. At the time, 30 changes of clothes was going to be, wow, like you are well off if you can, you know, wear a different outfit every day of the month. That's a fantastic kind of thing. You would have time to wash your clothes. It's wonderful. So this is a big boon. And for Samson, this would come easily to him with almost no work, right? He knows what his riddle is. He's got something no one's going to guess. And he thinks, I'm going to get all this stuff. It's going to be great. He seems to have an interest in the easy life, with indulgence and possession. So he comes up with a scheme. It's not going to really cost me anything. And really, like, it's going to cost the Philistine guys here something, but not, like, they don't each have to supply 30 changes of clothes. They each just have to supply one extra outfit, which is still an investment, but it wasn't going to be overly significant, but it's going to make his life easier. It's kind of like a lottery winning kind of situation here for him. But they can't solve it. One other note here on the riddle, although we could debate whether or not this is a riddle. I mean, that's really up for debate. I haven't read a lot of debate about this, but the nature of a riddle does get highly debated. If you're a fan of Lord of the Rings, or The Hobbit, more specifically. Man, there's a raging debate in the scholarly literary world about whether or not Bilbo's winning riddle was a riddle. What do I have in my pocket is apparently not a good riddle. So, there's a lot of debate about what happened there and if he stole the ring because it wasn't really a riddle, which would make Gollum kind of the hero of the story in a very bizarre and terrible way. Yeah. But I'm just saying it's out there. Now you know. Okay, with this riddle, just something to keep in mind is that it didn't necessarily, I mean, it doesn't rhyme in Hebrew. It just is happenstance in English that it comes out with rhyming words at the end, and that's kind of reflective of our poetry in modern English right now. It just was luck of the translation as you read it. It's kind of fun that out of the eater, out of the one who eats comes something sweet or whatever, but just pointing it out. All right, so what happens? No one can guess it. So on the fourth day, they said to Samson's wife, who's it's his betrothed now, but the situation would be that it's, you know, in the relationship is of this nature, because that's what they're doing, is they're celebrating, hey, the joining of these two. You would have the feast together to celebrate the marriage, and then, like, you're done. So they come to the wife and they say, entice your husband to tell us what the riddle is, lest we burn you and your father's house with fire. Have you invited us here to impoverish us? So they said, look, the reason you brought us here was just to make us poor. And if you want to prove that that's not the case, you need to find out from him what the answer is so that we can give the answer. And then we're going to make him poor. Welcome to marriage. We're going to take all of your husband's money. But if you don't, we will burn you with fire. And that's the statement they give her. The woman, of course, is terribly fearful of this. Samson's wife wept over him and said, you only hate me, you don't love me. You've put a riddle to my people and have not told me what it is. And so he says, I haven't told my mom or dad either. And so she cries, and she cries for him for the rest of the feast. And finally, at the end of the feast, he just can't take it anymore because of all the crying, and because he's a man. And then he finally says, okay, here's what it is, just stop crying. And he gives her the answer, she tells her people, and then we go on with the story. But understand from verse 15, the woman's fear is revealing, because she responds to the threat from these people. From her own people. And she takes the threat seriously, and that speaks to the violence that the Philistines have perpetuated. We're in a violent culture. And so when the people come to her and say, if you do not find out this riddle, we will burn you and your family. We will kill you all in fire. And she responds to that. Why? Because she knows that's the culture she's in. This is what's going to happen. She takes the threat seriously. So she finds out the answer and gives it to the people. Then, so the guys come to Samson on the last day and say, what is sweeter than honey? What is stronger than a lion? So they kind of set it up in a little nice poetical thing. I wonder, like 30 of them, how long it took them to come up with that. You know, let's do it nice. And they scribe it down. And so they give him the answer. He says to them, if you had not plowed with my heifer, you would not have found out my riddle. Implying that, you know, you only did that because you used my own things against me. Now, there is a comparison there of the woman to the heifer, but that shouldn't be seen as, like, overly insulting or anything like that. It wouldn't have been insulting in the culture. Hey, heifer's a, you know, especially if it's a nice heifer, it could be kind of a good thing. But his point is not to compare the woman to the cow. His point is to say you were using my own effort, my own work against me in doing that. So God uses the situation. So what happens? Verse 19, Spirit of the Lord rushes upon him. So Samson's like, oh, I'm so angry. And then the Spirit of the Lord fills him up, and he goes to Ashkelon, which is some distance away. It's not overly far, but it's a number of miles. I can't remember, 10, 15, something like that. So he goes some distance away. So there isn't going to be like a lot of rumor or repercussion. He goes down to Ashkelon. He strikes down 30 guys in the city, 30 Philistines, and he takes their spoils. He grabs their garments, And he brings them back. So he's like, fine, I will get you 30 outfits. But he's not going to go pay for it, because he doesn't have that kind of money. He's just a little guy from the tribe of Dan. Well, he's not a little guy, but... So he says, fine, I'll do it. And so he goes and far enough away that no one's going to really connect the things. And he kills 30 guys, takes their clothes, brings them back and says, here's your outfits. There you go. So God uses the situation to produce deliverance through Samson. In his anger and his lack of money, Samson goes out to fight. This does not stem from faith or national zeal, but through this, the Lord brings about a successful campaign against Ashkelon. Now, this is where it said earlier that his parents didn't realize it was from the Lord, that God was going to use this to produce deliverance. And he's doing this through Samson's own desires and interest in self-gratification. Whereas some of the other judges, they want to defend their people. You know, it's national zeal, or they're being faithful to God, or whatever it may happen to be. That's not going to work with Samson, because that's, you know, Samson doesn't have those interests, at least at this point. But what is going to work is kind of using Samson's self against him. And so that's what God sets up. He brings those things down. All right, so then what happens? We have violence at Timnah, is our next section. Chapter 15. After some days, at the time of the wheat harvest, Samson went to visit his wife with a young goat. And he said, I will go to my wife in the chamber, but her father would not allow him to go in. And her father said, I really thought that you had utterly hated her, so I gave her to your companions. Is not her younger sister more beautiful than she? Please take her instead. And Samson said, this time I shall be innocent in regard to the Philistines when I do them harm. He didn't view himself innocent before, because Ashkelon had not done anything against him, so he viewed himself as guilty. But now, when he comes back with his outfits, he's so upset, right, at the end of chapter 14. He's so upset, he just storms off, and the father is like, well, we have this whole wedding celebration and stuff going on, so he gives his daughter to, like, the next one down the line, to the best man, and says, okay, now she's your wife. And we've done all the work of the marriage, we're gonna see it through. And so, gave her away to someone else. Well, Samson doesn't realize all of this, so he's back home with mom and dad, really upset and angry. And after he cools down, sometime after he cools down, he's like, I'm going to go see that girl again. My wife, whom I went to all that effort of trying to marry, who I really found attractive and liked and whatever, I'm going to go find her. And he brings his little goat as a sacrifice. You know, we're going to celebrate together. It's like going grocery shopping and getting all the cool cheese or whatever. I don't know what you guys do. That's what my wife does for me, because I like cheese. So, we're going to have an anniversary. We get all the cool little cheeses. And she just lets me eat the cheese because she doesn't care. So, I share, though, because I love her. And so he comes down. So the way that Samson is treated here typifies the Philistines' treatment of Israel. Right? He comes back. The father's like, oh, I didn't know. So why did you give her away? Loving father here, by the way, when he realizes there's going to be violence, there's going to be a problem, he says, well, you know, I've got the younger daughter, my other daughter, the younger sister, and she's much prettier. Thanks, Dad. And, take her. But Samson's not happy. He didn't like that girl. He liked his wife. And so the way that Samson is treated typifies the Philistines' treatment of Israel. So Samson blames the Philistines as a whole. He blames the culture, not only his father-in-law. He is not just upset with the man. He's upset with the whole culture that has set this up. And that's right. It's rightfully so that he would be upset with the culture. So he says, I'm going to be innocent here. So what does he do? So Samson went out and caught 300 foxes. Now, I have not caught maybe one fox in my life, like trapped, kind of remove it from an area. I've seen lots of foxes, though. They're cool. I really enjoy foxes. capturing 300 seems like a time-consuming process. So I imagine it took some time to do this, but that kind of tells you the type of person Samson is. Like, his anger is stoked, and he keeps it there. But sometimes, that's not me. I'm not like Samson in so many ways. But like, if I were angry at something, and I'm like, I'm going to do this back at some, I come up with an idea. I'm going to capture a bunch of foxes, and I'm going to go through with this plan. Like, I'd be out there, and at fox number 5, I'd be like, you know what, I'm not really that angry anymore. And I'm not angry enough to keep catching. So, I'm just going to give up. You know, I'm going to let it go. That's not Samson. He keeps it stoked. He's like, 299, I need one more fox. And where was he keeping them? I don't know. Right? There's a cave somewhere in Israel where he like had walled it off, and then like every time he catches a fox, he just puts it back in there. So he gets to 300, his 300 foxes. He took torches and he turned them tail to tail and put a torch between each pair of their tails. So he ties the tails together with the torch in the midst of it, in the middle of the tails. Well, why would you do that? Because nothing, no creature likes being tied up to another creature. Right? If I tie you to someone else, you guys are going to work at trying to figuring out how to get untied. And so here you have two creatures. The best example I have about this in with cats. I don't know why this happened, but I thought it would be funny. You know, we had like a balloon, and one of the cats was kind of scared of the balloon. But it had like the little slip knot at the end to put it on a little child's wrist. And because that makes sense. But the child wasn't wearing it. And the cat's like creeping around the house, always staring at the balloon. So it seems like a natural sort of progression. You slip the little slip knot over the tail of the cat, put it down. Now the balloon is chasing the cat. I mean, that's what the cat thinks. And cat, whoosh, 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 all around our living room. Balloon trailing the cat, chasing it the whole way. You know, cat's freaked out. It was hilarious. So now you, instead of a balloon, which is inanimate, you tie to one fox another fox. And that fox is like, the other fox is chasing me back and forward. Like, everywhere I go. And they're both freaking out. The reason to do this is because it's going to make them go wild. Right? They're going to be uncontrolled. It's not going to be in any sort of orderly kind of thing. This is going to be out of control. So he gets them all together. He's tying them, lighting torches, setting them free, throwing them out of his wagon or whatever, and to send them forward. And he puts them off into all of the farmland that the Philistines have. Into the stacked grain, let's see, standing grain, verse 5, standing grain sets fire to the stacked grain, standing grain, as well as the olive orchards. And the Philistines said, who has done this? You know, what's going on? Why is this happening? So he gets all these foxes together, and it's a crazy, crazy time. Say, who did this? Verse 6, they said, Samson. They're like, who else could catch 300 foxes and take the time to tie them all up and light everything on fire? We know who did this. It was Samson. And it's because of the issue with his wife. We know he was really angry about it. So we know that this is what it's about. So the Philistines came up. Here's their response, verse 8. The Philistines came up and burned her and her father with fire. See, that fear she had way back with the riddle, completely justified fear. Because that is exactly what the people do. That's how their culture was responding to the situation. So the very thing she was fearful of, there was a reason she was fearful of it. It's what they do. So they kill his wife and his father-in-law and all that. Samson, verse 7, said to them, is this what you do? I swear I will be avenged on you, and after that I will quit. And he struck them hip and thigh with a great blow. So he starts slaying the people of Timnah. And after that he went down and stayed in the cleft of the rock of Etam. Then So he's done all this stuff here at Timnah. Now we get a new set of violence at Lehi. Verse 9, the Philistines came up and encamped in Judah and made a raid on Lehi. And the men of Judah said, "Why have you come up against us?" And they said, "We have come up to bind Samson, to do to him as he did to us." Well, what did he do? He burned all their stuff down. So now, not only do you have to use your money to go buy stuff, food, so that you can eat, but you're also going to have to spend even more money to replace the things that, the farmland and stuff. So they want revenge. So they can't find Samson. They come and they start raiding on Judah. And so Judah, they have this conversation. What are you doing? They said, "Samson did this to us. We're going to do this to you." So 3,000 men of Judah went down to the cleft of the rock of Etam and said to Samson, "Do you not know that the Philistines are rulers over us? What then is this that you have done to us?" And they said to them, he said to them, "As they did to me, so I've done to them." There's a lot of like just responding here, right? And they said to him, "We have come down to bind you, that we may give you into the hand of the Philistines." And Samson said to them, "Swear to me that you will not attack me yourselves." And they said to him, "No, we won't attack you. We will only bind you and give you into their hands. We will surely not kill you. That's not our goal. We just want the, you know, we want the raiding to stop. We want the violence to stop." And so they bound him with two new ropes and brought him up from the rock. So Lehi here is short for Ramath Lehi, which means jawbone. Now this place is known to the author. It's actually going to be named in response to the very story that he is recording. So at the time, this was probably not called Lehi, this area. This was probably known as something different when Samson is going through this experience. But because of what is about to take place, the name of the area changes. And when the writer writes down, he's using the new name or the name everyone in the area would know it by. But it kind of is hinting at what's going to take place. Okay. So we kind of know that. Verse 11. This passage holds a number of indications that the men of Judah were emotionally defeated by the Philistines when they come to Samson. They're emotionally defeated. How do we know that? Well, one, they talk with the Philistines. Philistines come up and start raiding them, start attacking them, and what's their response? Let's find a diplomatic solution. They're not like attacking back or anything like that. They're beaten down. So they just want to find out why are you doing it? You know, what's happening and how do we stop it? And that's all they're after. And number two, they give in to the request for Samson. Philistines are like, "This is what we want. We want Samson." They say, "Okay, we'll go find him." They don't give directions. They don't say, "Oh, he's at this rock. Just, you know, go left. Straight on till morning." Whatever. They will go get him. They're very emotionally defeated. Number three, they rebuke Samson for fighting. And number four, 3,000 of them, like 3,000, travel down to get Samson, but do not rebel themselves. 3,000 is a significant force of men. Right, which it tells you a couple of things. One, the rock of Etam is not distant. It's not very far from where they're at because a camping trip with 3,000 men, that's a significant kind of thing. So you're not traveling hundreds of miles to go somewhere. It's probably nearby, so all 3,000 guys can go and show up. But 3,000 men. My hometown growing up had 2,000 people in it. And that would have been like everyone. To have a force, a body of 3,000 men, this represents a significant force. But their response, the response of the 3,000 men is when they get attacked, is not to respond in military fashion. Their response is, as a group of 3,000 men, "Okay, we'll go find Samson." So emotionally defeated. The Philistines have been ruling over them. So they bind up Samson with two new ropes. That's significant. These aren't old kinds of ropes. It's going to make what happens that much more powerful. When they come to Lehi, the Philistines came shouting to meet him because they're angry. You know, they've lost their crops. And then the Spirit of the Lord rushed upon him in ways that we've seen it happen already. So the Spirit of the Lord comes upon Samson, empowers him, and the ropes that were on his arm became as flax that has caught fire. It was like, you know, thick grass. That's what it was like. But it wasn't just like grass, which you could pop grass anyway, but it was like grass that had been through the fire. You know, it was just nothing. That's what these ropes were like. So, remember, he had made the men of Judah swear they're not going to kill him. They're not going to attack him. So he doesn't even have to worry about them. And so he's just biding his time. Spirit of the Lord comes upon him. Pop! You know, it's nothing. Come at me, bro. So all these Philistines rush at him. His bonds melted off his hands. And he found a fresh jawbone of a donkey and put out his hand, and he took it, and he struck 1,000 men. And Samson said, with the jawbone of a donkey, heaps upon heaps, with the jawbone of a donkey, have I struck down 1,000 men. So verse 15, the fresh jawbone here is better than an old one in the situation in which we find ourselves. It would be less likely to break during the prolonged battle. I don't know how often you've had the opportunity to strike things down with bones, but if you're going to use a bone as a weapon, it's better to get a nice, fresh, you know, kind of pliable bone. A really old, dry one is brittle. It's likely to crack on head 30, 35, something like that. You know, maybe you kill a few, but then you would have to replace the weapon. But a nice, fresh jawbone, that's going to last you some time. The whole sequence is a little odd. If you've ever seen a donkey's jawbone, I mean, like, you know, it's got some shape to it. So how is he using it? I don't know. He could have been holding like one end of it and just clubbing people. It could have been holding it more in the center as kind of like a brass knuckle type of thing. And if you did that, you know, it would give protection maybe to two sides of your hands with the rest of the jaw. It doesn't matter. He used it. 1,000 men, I'm guessing he changed his method periodically. You know, you're like, well, that works pretty good. Let's try it like this now. And he changes things up. I mean, it's 1,000 guys, right? I'm just saying. I would get bored. You know. We were just talking about that earlier, right? Things of wonder. Sometimes just after a while you're like, well, this is nothing. Let's, you know, I'm going to make it more interesting. So maybe for a while he held both ends of it and he just, you know. Doesn't matter. He kills 1,000 guys. So everything is, he conquers the Philistines here in a dramatic, dramatic way. So he kills them, and that's why the place is called Ramath Lehi in verse 17. Verse 18, then he was very thirsty. Who wouldn't be? He was thirsty, and he called upon the Lord, and he said, you have granted this salvation by the hand of your servant. And shall I now die of thirst and fall into the hands of the uncircumcised? And God split open the hollow place that is at Lehi, and water came out from it. And when he drank, his spirit returned and he revived. Therefore, the name of it is called En Hakor. It is at Lehi to this day. And he judged Israel in the days of the Philistines 20 years. So the concern here is that to fall before the ungodly would not only be bad for Samson, because he would die, but Samson's kind of putting it on God. It would reflect poorly on the Lord. We see the same kind of approach in talking to God with both David and Saul. And there's some respective verses there. You can go read about that. But falling before the uncircumcised is particularly insulting. And Samson is kind of saying to God, look, you just let me have this incredible victory. And now I'm going to die by thirst. Kind of a little whiny kind of approach. But God opens it up, gives him water anyway. All right, we have a few minutes left in class for this question. What are some behaviors for which individuals bear blame, but society also deserves blame? And how can we address the individual and situation when there's personal blame that reflects their upbringing and culture? So can you think of sins that take place in our culture in which the individual, we're always responsible for our sin? So we want to recognize that the individual is responsible for the sin, but society is also sometimes responsible for the sin. Can you think of any sins like that? Suicide can be. Yeah, certainly. Because we have a culture that sometimes glorifies, depending on things.
Racism.
Okay, racism. Right, you're individually responsible. But society definitely can play a part in it. Yes, absolutely, especially in like where our society is now.
Abortion.
Abortion.
Vanity.
Okay, yeah, just like casual relationships. Okay, so we can definitely see that society communicates a lot of these things. Culture is responsible for at least the influence over people. Now, people are individually responsible too, but culture can be too. So how do we, as believers, as a church, how do we address that? What do you do in a church when someone says, well, yeah, I did this, but it's okay because, you know, this is what our society does? Okay. Yeah, so constantly coming back to God's word is a purifier here, and is good. What else might we do? Okay. So, you know, we approach the person at, like, a personal level. Go, I understand that, but it's still wrong. And deal with that. Sure. All those things are fine. It's just one of the things I want you to think about when you are dealing with stuff in the world. There is a calling, a biblical calling on you to be counterculture. Now, that doesn't mean that we have to go into a commune somewhere in like a remote part of Wyoming or anything like that. But we do have to be willing within society to go counter the way society goes. And sometimes there's a cost with that. All right, this ends where we're at in Judges. We will finish up next week, and it'll be, it'll be exciting because we still are Samson, and it's good all the way through. So I'll see you next week for Judges. Many of you will be here in 5 minutes for Minor Prophets, and then Theology, and then Minor Prophets again, because today is like the second best day of the semester. Wednesday is the best day because we get Theology twice, but... If you're not coming to Minor Prophets, go and enjoy your break. If you are, get up, walk around, stretch.